Evidence and Answers begins right now. This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. We're starting a new series on archaeology. First question, what role does archaeology have in biblical studies and apologetics? Dr. Pat Zukeran explains what archaeology is, how it confirms, clarifies, and corrects our understanding of the Bible, and why Christianity stands uniquely as a historical faith grounded in real people, real places, and real events. This is a series that you're surely going to enjoy. Brian Nixon of Paratus, a ministry of Veritas International University, joins Pat for an informative discussion. Now, on to part one of this two-part broadcast, entitled An Introduction to Biblical Archaeology.
And welcome to a new season of the broadcast. Joining me is Dr. Patrick Zukeran, author, pastor, and founder of Evidence and Answers, and a doctoral student at VIU's School of Archaeology. Great to have you on, Pat.
Yeah, great to be with you, Brian.
Well, as our listeners may know, archaeology is one of Veritas International University's strengths, with monumental discoveries under our belt. I'm referring, of course, to the work at Tel al-Hammam, but also to VIU graduate Dr. Scott Stripling's work at Shiloh. Add to the mix recent archaeological work here in the United States, and we find that Veritas is one of the leading biblical archaeology universities in the world. Our listeners may be wondering, why is biblical archaeology such a big deal? Why have an entire department dedicated to it? Well, the answer is easy. With the various opponents of the Christian faith mounting, the debate over the historical reliability of the Bible is of paramount importance. So in steps archaeology. Archaeology is a scientific tool that helps support the biblical record, providing concrete evidence for the Bible's assertions, as well as documenting humanity's quest to understand culture. This said, we'll be using Dr. Holden and Dr. Geisler's book, The Popular Handbook of Archaeology and the Bible, as our foundation for this series. As we progress through the top biblical archaeological discoveries, we'll use four D's to guide our discussions. First, the discovery, what and where the item was found. Second, the description of the item, its physical characteristic, what it reveals. Third, its dwelling, the context and historical setting it is found in the Bible. And finally, its denotation, its significance, what this tells us about the Bible's reliability. But before we jump into the top biblical discoveries, I want to talk to Pat about archaeology and why it's important. So Pat, let's just start with a basic question. Most of our listeners are familiar with archaeology, particularly from Indiana Jones and things they may see on Discovery Channel. But what exactly is biblical archaeology, and why is it important to the Christian faith?
Yeah, Brian, it's interesting you bring up Indiana Jones. That's what really got me excited about archaeology as a young believer in Christ. And actually, when I jumped into it, I realized it was quite different. But nevertheless, Indiana Jones still remains an inspiration and one of my favorite movies. But archaeology basically is the study of the human past and civilizations through the physical remains that are left behind. And so when we're talking about the physical remains, it includes things like buildings, cities, and ruins. It's rare you'll find these things intact. You're looking at just maybe parts of a wall or parts of a foundation. Also artifacts, you know, tools, pottery, weapons, and other everyday objects. Art, inscriptions, and burials, those are critical, especially in dating. And of course, biblical archaeology is very comprehensive now. You study the geology, you study the writings, you study the vegetation, you study the animals, the environment, the geography. So it's very comprehensive now when we're talking biblical archaeology. And archaeologists excavate and they document and interpret these remains to give us a picture of how people lived, what they believed, how societies developed and how cultures changed over time. And it's critical for biblical study because of the three C's, I say. It confirms our faith. Classic example is that for hundreds of years, people said the Hittites that are written about as early as the book of Genesis said, this is a mythological group. The Bible is mistaken. They do not exist. We've never found them. And lo and behold, in the early 1900s, we found the capital of the Hittite Empire, Hattusas, and been digging there for over a century. And we discovered the Hittite language is forerunner of the Indo-European languages. So it confirms faith. Second C, it clarifies our understanding of the Bible. You know, we read about Abraham defeating the five kings of the plain and rescuing Lot and then coming back to Jerusalem where he is blessed by the king of Jerusalem, you know, Melchizedek. Well, what's going on there? Abraham is the shepherd, right? The man, old man with a cane. How does he hunt down five kings and defeat them? And what's going on with Melchizedek? Well, this is where archaeology comes in. Abraham is what is known back then as Habiru. Habiru is a marauding warlord. I mean, he's just not a shepherd with a cane. He's a marauding warlord here. He's got flocks, but he's got an army to protect his flocks. And what the Habiru would do is often they would ask permission of the king of a particular city if they can use their territory to graze their flocks. And so Abraham had an alliance with Melchizedek, the king of Salem. And in return, the Habiru provided the frontline defense for a city. So that's why when Abraham hunts these men down and defeats them, it's the king of Salem, Melchizedek, who comes out and blesses him. And they have an alliance there. And that's why he gives them 10% of his booty. So it helps clarify the text. And finally, it helps correct often our interpretation of the text. And a classic example that you, I'm sure, know about is the documentary hypothesis, or the Wellhausen theory. This was taught in almost every seminary and Christian college in the West. I went to a Christian college and I was learning the documentary hypothesis. And one of the reasons I chose Dallas Seminary for my grad school is it's one of the few schools that held that Moses actually wrote the Pentateuch. But the documentary hypothesis was the dominant theory of the time. And it taught that the first six books of the Bible weren't written by Moses or Joshua. They were late 6th, 7th century BC writings written by a school of priests, JEPD, the Jehovah School, the Elohim School, the Priestly School, and the Deuteronomic or the Legal School. These school of priests gathered the traditions and folklore and myths that were around at that time and threw them together. And so, you know, it shattered the faith of many Christians all over the world, thinking this is a late 6th, 7th century when Jesus and Moses were saying they wrote the Pentateuch. Well, one of the arguments against Mosaic authorship is that archaeologists and Old Testament scholars were saying, well, there was no phonetic alphabet system back in the days of Moses, so he couldn't have written it. Well, archaeology soon disproved that. It showed that a phonetic alphabet system existed hundreds of years before Moses. In the 17th or 18th century, we have Sumerian, Babylonian, Assyrian, and Hittite texts that we have discovered, you know, the Ebla tablets, the Code of Hammurabi, the Rosh Shamra tablets, the Nuzi tablets, all showing that there's an alphabet system a few hundred years before Moses, and that Moses, when he wrote Leviticus and Deuteronomy, he's writing according to the Hittite legal code. How does a 7th century priest know how to write in the format of the Hittite legal code way back in the early Bronze Age? And so archaeology soon demonstrated that the documentary hypothesis or the Wellhausen theory was indeed standing on very thin ice here, and that whoever wrote the Pentateuch was around during the time of Moses, and he's a great candidate. And so that's how archaeology, and that's why it's important to not only to apologetics, but biblical studies.
Yeah, I love that, Pat. Just the idea of those three C's confirms our faith, clarifies our understanding of the Bible, and corrects interpretation of history in the Bible. Very, very valuable. So that was splendid. Thank you for that. Well, like you, Pat, I was very much interested in archaeology because of the Indiana Jones movies. But a little even before that, I had watched a documentary. I had my mother drive me to a movie theater here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where they were showing The Search for Noah's Ark. And that was my first exposure to John Warwick Montgomery, and who became a mentor later on. But the point is that as an impressionable young man, these archaeologists really took on bigger than life. You know, we know that a lot of it, that is a lot of the quote-unquote Hollywood of it, the day in, day out of archaeology as well. But share with our listeners a little bit more of how you became interested in biblical archaeology and why you decided to academically pursue it.
Yes, you know, one of the things, not only as a Bible teacher, but as an apologist, you're constantly defending the historical reliability of the Bible. I remember when I first became a Christian at 17 years old, I heard the message of the gospel, and I thought it was the greatest message I had ever heard. Well, the next day I went to the school priest, and I went to a very liberal Episcopal high school, and I shared with him, I heard the message of the gospel, and it's about God coming to earth and dying for our sins, and he just kind of smiled and said, I don't take it so serious. Christianity is like any other religion, but if it makes you happy, well, good for you. You know, and I was just stunned. Here's a priest who didn't seem to believe the gospel that I just heard. And his attitude was very different from the pastor and the Christians at the church I had gone to on Sunday. Well, I took Bible class from him just so I could learn the Bible. I had not really read through the Bible. And he showed us all the historical errors and contradictions and parallels to all these ancient mythological texts from Mesopotamia and the Greeks and the Romans. And this is where the Bible writers got their ideas. And, you know, I was becoming really disillusioned, the case against the historical reliability of the Bible, and thus Christianity really shook me until I was introduced to this arena of apologetics. Then I saw compelling reasons and evidence that God exists. But I also had to answer that question. Is the Bible really a historical book? I mean, Christianity claims to be a historical faith. Is there historical evidence for it? And so that's how I got interested in archaeology. And the more and more I studied, I was just amazed at what I discovered about the Bible. And also, as I got into apologetics, and you constantly have to defend the historical reliability of the Bible, this is kind of embarrassing. I'm glad YouTube and podcasting and all that didn't exist when I first began, because I was teaching a lot of bogus archaeology, you know, and one of the great things about this show is that there's a lot of bogus archaeology out there, you know, and I was teaching about, we found the chariot wheels of Pharaoh, you know, all this kind of stuff. And a nice gentleman would come from the audience and said, that's not quite true. That's bogus archaeology. And I constantly had to keep correcting myself. And finally, I got to the point where I said, I really need to get trained in this. I really need to study this and know who's who and what is good archaeology so that I'm not misleading people by teaching them this kind of bogus archaeology. And so, you know, it's kind of a short story of how I really got involved and decided to pursue it at a graduate level.
Great story. And I remember, Pat, back in the day when I was teaching middle school and high school science, and there was the Bible teacher, and he would always come to me as the quote-unquote science teacher and say, hey, this new archaeological discovery, and he would use some of those very things that you brought up, and I would always have to challenge him, and I would say, hey, listen, before you go and tell your Bible students that this is accurate, it's real archaeology, you need to go and test the sources. You need to hear both sides, and lo and behold, you know, a lot of these quote-unquote discoveries turned out to be false. So I'm glad that you did the responsible thing and you went and studied and are now a doctoral student at Veritas. So you've excavated on several sites. Give our listeners an example of what to expect on an excavation site. You know, what do you just show up with, you know, good intentions, or do you have certain tools? What exactly happens on the day-to-day of a site?
Yeah, you know, Brian, I mean, biblical archaeology is a relatively young field, but it's fast growing and it's exciting. I mean, there's no dig like digging in the Holy Land of Israel. You go on digs in other parts of the world. When you're digging in Israel, I mean, you just kick the dirt and you're finding things. I mean, it's really exciting. And something that people may not know, that really only 10% of what's out there has actually been excavated and studied. I mean, 90% has yet to be excavated and studied. So perhaps we're going to be inspiring a new generation of archaeologists to get out there and this make great discoveries in days to come. But the reason, Brian, is that it takes years to build relationships with the governments, you know, of these countries. They need to get to know you and trust you. Then you need to apply and get permission to dig at a particular site. Then you need to survey the site. Then you need to come up with the financing for an excavation, you know, and then you need to put an excavation team together. Then you need to collect your discoveries and take them to the warehouse and store them. Then you need a team to come in and study them and finally publish your findings. And that's why, you know, it can take years. And when you get to a dig site, you know, first you need to take a course on excavation technique. You know, you just can't go in there and start whacking things away with a shovel. It's a very delicate skill you have to develop there. So first you got to take a course. Then when you, you know, you can sign up for a site on as many biblical archaeological schools there that are doing digs, and you can look one up that you like. I highly recommend one that Veritas does. You mentioned Scott Stripling at Shiloh, because many archaeologists don't hold a high view of the Bible, and it's no fun to be out there digging with a bunch of people who don't believe in the Bible, and they're treating the site really carelessly and maybe overlooking stuff that could be very significant because they just don't hold a high view of the Bible. So I would recommend you pick one with a good supervisor there. And when you get to the site, you know, you'll meet the excavation leader who'll probably give you a tour and lay out an overview of the dig. And then you'll be assigned to what we call a square. It's a 10 meter by 10 meter square. And you'll probably have a square team of 3 to 8 people. And you'll have a square supervisor who oversees all that goes on in that square. And it's all a coordinated effort, as, you know, you may have 5 squares, you may have 30 squares, but everyone's got to dig at about the same pace. One square can't be digging a lot faster than everyone else. We want to be going down at the same time. You know, and the kind of tools you'll be using is shovels and trowels and various brushes as you dig. You're literally scraping off the top and going down. It's not something that you just drill down. You got to be very careful as you go down because there's artifacts and parts of buildings and temples that you might hit. And when you find artifacts or a significant marker, you know, you call your square supervisor over and they'll come and examine and see what you find. And some important discoveries include pottery. You know, pottery is the most important because it's everywhere. Everybody uses pottery, but it's the most accurate way of dating here, the most accurate method of dating. Coins are very accurate, but they're a lot more rare. You know, jewelry, bones, when you find artifacts like that, you call your supervisors over and say, hey, we got something important here, and they'll take a look at it. You're looking for parts of monuments, you know, like a wall, maybe part of a fortress wall or the foundation, a floor, an altar. And then you're looking for vegetation, you know, like seeds and corn. Maybe you hit a kitchen or a cooking area. And then you're looking for other things like burn levels. You know, maybe the city was destroyed by fire, and so you're at a particular burn level where the city was burned down. And so the discoveries are photographed, drawings are made, because once you excavate a site and you take the artifacts to the warehouse, that it's gone forever. So you need careful documentation of where you found things and what it looked like. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have buckets of pottery sherds and artifacts and tools. And so the whole team comes together and you wash all your discoveries, you label and group them, and they're taken to the warehouse for storage. So that's kind of the grind of everyday archaeology out there.
That was a great overview. And what's fun, Pat, of course, as you know, I was able to excavate with you with VIU's North American site, what we call KZAP. And that was actually my first excavation. So it was fun for me to watch all of this transpire as it unfolded. And you're exactly right. I was assigned a square. I normally just became the dirt pusher, you know, picking up what you guys were doing. But I was really impressed with the amount of pottery sherds and everything else that was going. And of course, as the KZAP excavation continued here in the States, that I started to, you know, get the trowel and shovels and started to dig layer by layer. And I actually found some things as well. So there's an excitement to it where you do call everyone over and they look at it and everyone weighs in on it. And your square supervisor is documenting everything. So it's a lot of hard work, but it is also very, very exciting. And you just gave a great summary of that. Well, Pat, one of the things is, you know, when we talk about biblical archaeology, it's just another avenue to demonstrate that Christianity is comprehensive. As you already alluded to, it involves the Bible, it involves science, it involves the art, it involves history. It really gives us this broad, big view, not only of the Bible, but of culture in general. So how does archaeology really help accomplish this holistic, this very broad view of the Christian faith and culture?
Yeah, that's, you know, one of the things that I was really impressed about as I studied apologetics, that Christianity really presents a comprehensive case for its claims. You know, it reminds me, not long ago, I was speaking with a bunch of scientists at a faith and science conference, and a university student, I think it was a graduate student, asked, he said, you know, I see that a lot of you rely on science to prove Christianity is true, but the scope of science is limited. And being the non-laboratory scientist there, I said, well, Christianity doesn't just rely on science, as you stated, Brian. It presents a very comprehensive case for its claims. I said, in Christian apologetics, we use reason and we use evidence from various fields of study, science, literature, archaeology, history, geography, and we look at the text, we look at manuscripts, and also our experience. Does it confirm what we experience about the world around us? And he was very interested in that answer. And he said, well, give me some examples. So I know in previous shows, we demonstrated that there is compelling evidence that God exists. You know, we used reason, we used science, we used the evidence. Also, we presented a very compelling case that Jesus was a real historical person who lived a unique and miraculous life, died and resurrected from the dead. And so archaeology, you know, provides historical evidence that confirms that what we have in the Bible is a reliable record of God's activity in the world. And if the Bible is a reliable historical document, then Christianity is indeed true. So as you said, Christianity presents a very comprehensive case for its claims.
Great answer.
Once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat. by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586. Or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.